Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. We talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler. PintGlassFootball.com is the website. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. What's up, PGF Nation? We are back. Happy New Year's, guys. A lot to get to today. Eagles completely falling apart. What is going on in Philly? Cowboys escape versus the Lions and that debacle with the refs at the end of the game. Going to have to jump into that. Maybe the best college football playoff games ever. Can't wait to break those down. We'll also preview the national championship game and a lot more, but joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Hey, Brad, one more week to go. We're coming down to the what we are at. We're at the final stage of this. Some meaningful games coming up this Sunday, too, that we're going to need to talk about, but let's jump into it.
Yeah, Alex, a ton to get to. College football, man, how great was that. I can't wait to jump into that. NFL, it's getting crazy. We got playoffs around the corner. Going to have a ton of playoff stuff to talk about next week, of course, but we've got some games to break down. We've got some things to get to. I want to start with a little bit of news, though, Alex. I put out an article, pintglassfootball.com. It's on the newsletter. If you guys subscribe, check it out. And I think we should talk about it, Alex, because everyone's talking about it. Russell Wilson benched by the Broncos. The Denver Post, Parker Gabriel, he really put it together nicely, Alex, because he talked about the contract and what this all meant for Denver, Parker Gabriel of the Denver Post. He says, Wilson's contract contains a provision that if he's on Denver's roster on March 17th, his $37 million salary in 2025 becomes guaranteed. And he also noted that because the risk of injury, it really complicates matters further going ahead with this, potentially locking the Broncos into two more years of salary if Wilson were to sustain a significant injury in the final 2 weeks of the season. So that's why they made this move here. Obviously, they didn't want to risk that, and it's become crystal clear they're going to move off of Russell Wilson. This whole experiment is over, and this is going to go down, Alex, as one of the worst contracts we have ever seen. They're going to have to take a massive cap hit because of this deal. I want to get your thoughts first on, just quickly, what did you make of this move, them pivoting off of Russell? And then let's talk about a couple teams where we think he could end up.
Okay, so the first thing is, and I think I've talked about it enough over the whole season, that this was a win-win for Sean Payton, whether Russ turned it around, Sean Payton was going to get all of the credit, and if Russell fell flat, Russell Wilson was going to all the blame, and Payton was going to be able to walk away scot-free. I don't like it. Apparently, neither does the NFLPA, if we read the stories in the Washington Post and a couple other places about how they asked him and told him if he did not renegotiate that the provision that you were talking about, that they were going to bench him. And you cannot do that under the CBA. So there's a lot to unravel here. But if we're just talking about simply the benching of Russell, I think it's unfair.
Yeah, it's a messy situation. It really is. And it's like, look, you guys signed him to this big deal. I get that he hasn't lived up to it. I get that it hasn't gone like you've expected. But the treatment and the way it's been handled has been messy. And you're right. Unfair is a good way to put it to Russell Wilson. And I think it's pretty clear that he's going to get a second shot with another team here. I think even though he's not the player he used to be, he's going to end up getting a chance for somebody, because we know there's only so many legit starting quarterbacks in the NFL, and there's always teams that are looking for one to stabilize that position. I've got a few teams that I think make a lot of sense, Alex. Like I said, I wrote an article about this recently, highlighted a few teams that I think could be potential landing spots. But what do you think? Where is a team, or maybe a couple teams, that you think we need to circle here that Russell Wilson could be headed to?
My number one team with a bullet, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh Steelers, you have been looking for a quarterback. You have had a Super Bowl roster for the past maybe, let's say, 6 to 7 years, the tail end of Ben, and in like the past 3 to 4 years now that you've been waffling around with Duck Hodges, Mason Rudolph, Mitchell Trubisky, and now Kenny Pickett, which was a terrible first-round pick, but I digress. Finally, go and get a guy. He fits the culture. He has a coach in Mike Tomlin, similar to Pete Carroll, that can cover him because Russ is not the clear-cut leader. A lot of players don't take to him, but I think that culture, that small town, smaller media, he can survive and he can flourish in that culture under Mike Tomlin and probably give them another chance at another run for a Super Bowl.
Yeah, Pittsburgh was a team that I noted in my article, Alex, because they're in dire need of a quarterback, and they need stability at that position. There is no doubt about it. You hit on it. Solidify the position, and it's a mess. I mean, there's no way around it. They've got maybe the worst quarterback room in the entire NFL. I think Wilson is a guy that we've seen in the past. He thrives in a run-heavy offense, and I think that's something that is in Pittsburgh's DNA. It's something that Mike Tomlin wants to do. It's something the second half of this season, we've seen Pittsburgh try to get back to running the ball more consistently. And it was a big reason why they moved off of Matt Canada as well, because they wanted to try to bring back a more run-first offense. And I think when you bring in a guy like potentially like Russell Wilson, we've seen that work. He's good in the play action off of the running game, opening lanes down the field for him to take shots down the field. I think it could be a really ideal scenario for those Pittsburgh Steelers in 2024. I think it offers them a proven veteran presence and helps stabilize the offense, at least in the short term. I think maybe a short-term deal here, but I think it makes a lot of sense, Alex. Is there any other teams that you think could be a good potential landing spot for Wilson?
I know there's a thing out there because the Raiders were one of his choices as well. I don't think it's a good space for him either, even though the talent and style may fit his family culture. But I just don't think Russ wants to go to the Raiders where we don't even know what direction we're going in. I don't think that would be a good fit for him either.
I think one team to circle here, though, is the Washington Commanders, because this is a team that I think is going to be in search of a new quarterback. Russell Wilson could potentially be the answer for this team. And when you look at Eric Bieniemy, the offensive prowess and his play calling, and you've got a proactive owner, a new ownership group in Washington, I think there's some appeal there. I think there's some fit there that could potentially work in Washington.
Yeah, I can agree there. I mean, I'm not sure Washington. I know we talked about Eric Bieniemy, but I think quote-unquote Black Monday is going to be different storytelling there, because I think we may not be seeing what we thought we were going to see with the Washington Commanders with the ascension of Eric Bieniemy there. I'm not sure what's going to happen there. I'm going to have some takes on that as we start to close out the season.
The last team that I mentioned in the article, Alex, that I thought as far as a fit on the field would be potentially the Atlanta Falcons. Now, this is a team that I also think is going to be in the Justin Fields sweepstakes at the end of the year. When you look at this team, you've got Arthur Smith, which, let's face it, we don't know if he's going to be the head coach next year. I think his seat is definitely heating up. GM Terry Fontenot, those guys came in together in 2021. They're in desperate need of a quarterback shakeup here, because Desmond Ridder, he's been below average, really just hasn't solidified himself as a legit starter in this league. And he was a former mid-round pick. So I think a lot of people had question marks whether he could be that guy anyway. They gave it a shot. It hasn't gone well. I think Wilson is a guy who could come in and be, once again, a stabilizing force there and could really help to try to unlock some of these young talents, Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, just bringing in a veteran guy, a proven, experienced quarterback. Even though Wilson isn't the guy he was in Seattle, just bringing in a veteran quarterback that can bring the offense up to a higher level and get these playmakers more involved in the offense, bring more fluidity to the offense, I think could be appealing for a team that probably isn't going to be drafting high enough to get one of the elite quarterback talents in this draft. So maybe that's a route they go.
You know what? I have absolutely no pushback on the field play and the organization and everything that you said about Russell Wilson. I think you're spot on with that. Unfortunately, in 2023, we have to interject the hip-hop culture into where a player can go, and there's no need to get into it. It's kind of silly, but unfortunately, he's been dealing with this for a while, as has his wife, and even NFL teams have taken to playing Future, who is the father of his wife's son, and playing his music as an antagonistic way to annoy Russ, when he's on the field warming up, and although he's able to shut out the music, but to put him in the home city of that artist as well as Sierra's home city, and the way that culture of that team is set up, I just don't think it's a fit for the city, and it may not bode well off the field, even though everything on the field makes perfect sense. I just don't know. That just seems very tumultuous and a lot more pressure outside than it would be to take and say, hey, I want to go there. Interesting thought, but I don't know. As much as we love Russ, I don't know if he can handle it.
Alex, Eagles just lost to a 3-win Cardinals team last Sunday. Wow. It's starting to fall apart in Philadelphia, and we got to talk about it, Alex. They've lost 4 of their last 5 games. They are giving up 31 points per game in that stretch. The Eagles defense right now is a unit that demoted / fired, however you want to put it, their defensive coordinator 3 weeks ago. It's a mess. Players look like they can't wait for the year to be over, Alex. I hate the vibes that I'm getting around this team. The coaches look lost right now. They keep preaching together, talking about how we need to be together. But to me, Alex, that's the sign of a fractured locker room. This team is in serious trouble, Alex. And I said last week, early playoff exit. And it looks like it more than ever right now. I can't believe how bad this team looks. The second half of the season, it has looked like a completely different football team. At one point, they were 10-1. Here they are now at 11-5. This is a broken football team right now, Alex, and I don't think there's an answer in sight.
First off, I think some Eagle fans are nuts. I'm sorry. Y'all are nuts. You're talking about fire Nick Sirianni. You're talking about get rid of Brian Johnson. Listen, this is the NFL. When you have coaching turnover to the magnitude that the Eagles have had, as well as personnel turnover, this is what you're going to get. You're going to take a step back. You don't hear anybody in Kansas City talking about firing Andy Reid and get rid of this one and that one. No, they understand that they lost a lot of players. A lot of players got older, and they were going to take a step back, and they were going to struggle. So this is the Eagles taking a step back. Oh, by the way, on top of losing the coordinators, defenses had an entire year to study that playbook. So even when you did run some of those plays again, they recognize that this is just the maturation of the NFL catching up. It only takes a season for these defensive coordinators. We have to give them credit to catch up. So perhaps they will be one and done. Who knows? Maybe they end up pulling out one of these games out of nowhere and they're still in the hunt. We don't even know where they're going to be seated because that is up for grabs. And we'll talk about that Cowboy game later on, why that the division is still up for grabs. But salute to Kyler Murray. And as the Cardinals and Jonathan Gannon came out and said, he will be the starting number one quarterback next year. So look for Marvin Harrison to be on that. We'll talk about that later. But we still have to give some credit to the Arizona Cardinals because they were down in this. They had to come back. They deserve a lot of credit in this as well.
And it really just reflects the coaching staff and what they've done there. And to your point, Alex, when you lose your defensive coordinator, you lose your offensive coordinator, you lose a lot of key pieces. We talked about it in the offseason when we were doing our previews, we were doing our divisional picks. We talked about, look, we thought the Eagles would be good, but we thought they were going to take a step back. Now, that 10-1 start kind of made it look like, okay, maybe they aren't going to take a step back. Maybe this is the same Eagles team, but I think it was a little bit of a mirage. And I think now they're coming crashing back down to earth at the worst possible time. Ravens crush the Dolphins. Man, Alex, this was impressive. This team has really been on a tear. I have no idea last week why I thought this would be a good game. Because I thought about this, Alex, after this game. It goes against everything I've believed all year as far as these teams go. So I don't know why for a second I thought this would be a good game because I've been buying the Ravens stock and Lamar stock all season. I've been selling Dolphin stock because I think it's overvalued. And I've continued to say that, yet for some reason I thought Miami would make this close. Of course this is what's going to happen. You've got the Ravens who are a legit contender. You've got the Miami Dolphins who have been a pretender all season long. They never beat anyone legit. Yeah, they barely beat the Cowboys, but who cares? They aren't a real contender either. The Ravens are, though. This team is a contender. This is a team that could absolutely win the whole thing. They locked up the one seed in the AFC. This is a complete football team right now. this is a team that doesn't just win games, they smash teams. And I think that's what's even more impressive. Look how many blowout wins the Ravens have this year, and against a lot of good teams too. I think they put out about a bit as big of a statement that they could, that they are no doubt the best team in football right now, back-to-back weeks. If they can maintain really anything close to the type of rhythm that they've played with on Sunday, I think they're going to be the favorites in every playoff game, and I think they should make a real run at a Super Bowl.
You know what, Brad? I think, myself included in this, I think it's time that we start to recognize Baltimore as the best team in the league. And here's the reason why. I still think any team can be beat, but this is just, there's been a bit of back and forth about San Francisco and Baltimore, regardless if Baltimore beats San Francisco. But there's something that we always talked about with the SEC in college football. It was always that those guys beat each other up, but then when they step out of their conference, they smash everybody else. That used to be true to form, you know, maybe 5 to 8 years ago, they were just smashing anybody anytime they left the SEC conference. This is what Baltimore is. They have to play Cleveland, number one defense in the league. We know about the Pittsburgh and Baltimore battles. And then, Cincinnati is also a very good team when healthy. That is the toughest division. If you look in the AFC North, everybody has 8 or more wins. You know what that means? They are battle-tested across the board. So when they step out and have to face any one of these other guys, they can line up and play physical, which is, I think, is the number one thing they have over a lot of teams that they will be facing in the playoffs. Physicality. But on the Miami side, Miami had a big win against Dallas last week. But again, the physicality that Baltimore brought. And let's remember, they were missing probably their best defensive player, depending on how you feel about Roquan Smith on that team, and Kyle Hamilton. He was not out there after the great game he had against San Francisco. Both teams were due for a letdown coming off big wins, but Miami completely did not show up. Baltimore stepped up and just really stepped on them like a roach and then grinded their foot into the ground.
Yeah, Alex, and I want to give some credit because I don't know if we've brought up his name on the podcast yet. Defensive coordinator Mike McDonald for the Baltimore Ravens. This guy is a rock star, and I have no doubt that he is going to get some serious looks at head coaching positions this offseason. Circle that name. I know we've got Black Monday coming up, which, by the way, we're going to be covering that, of course, on the podcast next week. But keep your eye on his name this offseason. We're going to be paying attention because the job he has done with this Ravens team, he was with Jim Harbaugh at Michigan prior, and he made that defense elite. Here he is with the Ravens making their defense once again elite. This guy really knows how to dial it up on the defensive side of the ball, and I would be shocked if he doesn't get a serious look at some head coaching jobs. Alex, the Cowboys survive versus the Lions. This was a great game. I think it was one of the best Monday Night Football games of the year. Even though it was on a Saturday, which was kind of weird. But anyway, this felt like a playoff game. Really well played. The Lions look 100%. They got screwed by the refs in this game. Just awful. I mean, all-time bad ref moment. We'll dive into that more in just a minute. I know you've got takes. I've got takes. I want to stick with the game here for a second, though, before we get to that. The Lions could have blown this game open. There was a point where it looked like they might, but they just made way too many mistakes on offense. 2 picks from Jared Goff. They couldn't win on third down. They went just 4 for 13, and they had a failed fourth down at the Dallas Cowboys 4-yard line in a situation where I think a field goal probably was the better decision, especially in a tight game. I know the analytics guys love to push back about how you should always go for it on fourth down and all that stuff. I get it. But in that situation, I think the 3 would have been the right choice. Alex, I think it's a good thing that the Cowboys won this game, because if not, I think everyone in the media would be pointing fingers at Mike McCarthy's botched time management late in this game. And because they won and the whole ref thing, no one's really talking about it. And the Cowboys offense, I mean, it was bad. I mean, for the most part, it just really wasn't very good at all in this game outside of CeeDee Lamb, who looked like T.O. in his prime out there. I mean, it was ridiculous watching CeeDee Lamb just go off. Nobody could stop him. But outside of him, nobody else really made any plays for this Cowboys offense. Now, the Lions, they tore up the Cowboys defense for 400 yards. I think that was the most eye-opening thing about this game. But the defense, they just made enough key stops to get this win, even though it was a really close game. The Lions looked like the better team. I felt like watching this game, like I said, tight game, two pretty evenly matched teams. I think the Lions just looked like the better team for the most part. Now, like I said, there was a lot of key plays in this game that didn't go their way. They should have won this game. I think if they play again, which is definitely a possibility come playoff time, I like Detroit in this matchup. I want to get your thoughts on this specific game, and then obviously we'll dive into the controversy.
This game was a back-and-forth game. I mean, there was a lot that went on. When I say back-and-forth, just in terms of mistakes, there was that key fumble. I believe that was CeeDee Lamb. That key fumble that CeeDee Lamb lost. There was also, before all hell broke loose, there was a key turnover interception by Jared Goff on their side of the field that made a short field for Dallas to do some things with. So I think there were a lot of mistakes. Had this game just played out the way that it played out, that both teams, without the controversy, never mind the controversy, if either team had lost, had the Cavs that play worked and the Cowboys lost, they should only look at themselves by that fumble and some plays that they left on the field. And for the Lions, though, that turnover on their side of the field, they could look at themselves as well. Again, controversy aside. However, I want to say something to the Cowboys. I said it last week. I'm not going to dive into it again. Dalvin Cook just got released. If you all do not go and get Dalvin Cook, you guys were 21 for 61 for 2.9 yards rushing per average. Go and get Dalvin Cook. You need another running back. You need a guy that can get in between the tackles and do some things. You do not have it. You cannot have Dak out there throwing for 345 yards and basically, for lack of a craziness that happened at the end, losing this game. And a guy that caught for 227 yards, that is crazy. You should not be losing this game. This game should not have been close. And on the Detroit side, and we're going to have to talk about it at some point, Brad, Jameson Williams, I told you I thought there was always going to be one of those busts out of that Alabama crew. I think it's going to be Jameson Williams. However, but looking at this game, I felt they should have used him a little bit more. And they need to probably maybe open it up to using him a little bit more if they're not going to run it down the throat like they should. But this game, I think, was poorly coached. And we can just move on and get into what happened at the end of the game, because that was complete madness.
Yeah, before we do, I think the one thing, when I said I think Detroit, I like them maybe a little more than Dallas. I just think Detroit looks like a more balanced team than Dallas. To your point,
agreed,
about Dallas, yeah, their lack of being able to run the ball consistently, where Detroit does not have that problem. They've got two good running backs. They've got that amazing offensive line. They're not afraid to play some smash mouth, set up the play action. You know, people can debate whether Goff or Dak's better, whatever. I don't care. I think they're both in the same neighborhood. But the point is that I just feel like you look at the playmakers on the outside for Detroit and you look at the offensive line and the weapons on offense. I like Detroit's offense as a whole more than Dallas. And I think Dallas has a better defense, but we saw Detroit shred that defense. Outside of a couple key turnovers, they were moving the ball on this defense. So I think they play again. I think I expect another great game. But I'm with you. I don't like how Dak-dependent this Cowboys team is on offense at all. Now, let's jump into the controversy. And I'm gonna make it official here, because it became the WTF moment of the week for me. If you guys are new to the show, every week there's a player, a coach, a ref, someone in the NFL or college football that makes us say WTF was that.
Oh,
Alex, never has there been a more obvious one than this week. Brad Allen, NFL ref, hands down the WTF moment for me. Embarrassing. I mean, we all saw what happened. It went viral for hours after the game. Detroit goes for the two-point conversion to win the game in regulation. They complete the pass to an offensive tackle who came into the game, and video replay clearly shows that he reported to the ref. Now, the ref claims that he didn't. The video shows him going up to the ref. Why else would he be going up to the ref? He's not going up to the ref to say, hi, how you doing? What'd you have for lunch? Nobody. We know why he went up to the ref. He went up to the ref to make it clear, look, I'm reporting as eligible. The ref somehow doesn't hear him, doesn't acknowledge it. I don't know. But that's not on the player to make sure he heard him or to make sure that he understood what he was telling him. You go up to the ref, you tell him that you're eligible. This is also a situation where Dan Campbell talked to the refs before the game, telling them the situation, how he was going to have tackles, be reporting in and out of the game as eligible, and yet somehow they completely botched this. It's a bad look for the NFL. This is a game-changing and possibly playoff-seeding, altering call by the ref. You can't have it. Now, there's reports that are coming out, I saw this recently, that are saying the NFL is going to downgrade Brad Allen and his crew for the playoffs. Some apparently are not going to be refs in the playoffs now after this whole debacle, and rightfully so. Nobody wants to see this crew in a big game right now.
I mean, up there with the Calvin Johnson catch or no catch, up there with the Dez Bryant catch or no catch, catch or no catch, or even the flipping of the coin with Jerome Bettis. This right here, for with quote unquote America's team and everyone watching on a holiday week, you can't have this type of debacle happen. And regardless of who anybody had in their rooting interest, I had never heard so many Cowboys fans actually come out and say WTF as well, that they even felt the Lions got holes. Never mind what happened to them a few years ago when Brandon Pettigrew got held by the Cowboys in that playoff game and it wasn't called. But here we go again. This was blatant. It was unexplainable. And if this was some trial to send somebody to jail for 25 to life, there would be an indictment against this man. It would be open and shut case. The grand jury would indict. We'd be moving on with our lives because this was ridiculous. And I don't need to talk about it much because the tape speaks for itself. We've looked at it upside, downside. We looked at the all 22 to all 11. However you want to look at it, this should have never happened. It's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, Brad, my WTF moment, you know, I think we were both aligned. I think we probably both were texting it at the same time about that Lions and Cowboys game. But once I saw this video of Panthers owner David Tepper throwing a drink at a Jaguars fan, I had to shift from that and give it to an owner. You can't, because you're getting booed, you put a bad product on the field, sir. They deserve to make fun of you. They deserve to boo you. Brad, I don't even know if you saw. I sent you another one of Panther fans booing the Panther players and talking about Bryce Young, Brian Burns, who is a great player. Adam Thielen, calling saying Adam Thielen, you're the only guy that cares on the team. Because David Tepper, you have put this team in such a position. You have put a bad product on the field. You defied your GM and your coaching when it appears that they were the ones that wanted to go after CJ Stroud. You defied them and did what you wanted to do. And you cannot get mad when the opposing team boos you, and you cannot get mad when your own fans are booing you as well. You have to take it as a man because you did this, sir. And the opening line of the personal conduct policy literally states conduct detrimental to the integrity and public confidence in the NFL. That's literally how the personal conduct policy starts. And they hold owners to a higher standard than they even hold the players, because they actually have to deal directly with the fans. You, sir, sit in the luxury box in a suite and can sit in the back and not come out and never be seen should you not want to be. You decided to engage with this fan instead of just taking it like a man and walking out and maybe trying to do a better job so that this does not happen when you go to opposing stadiums or even happen at your own stadium where your own players are getting booed. So David Tepper, WTF, what are you going to do to fix it instead of throwing a temper tantrum? What are you going to do to fix this?
Yeah, this was absolutely ridiculous. You're the second richest owner in the entire NFL. Your team has been a total train wreck. We talked about David Tepper a few weeks back when you decided to fire Frank Reich, your head coach, and we've seen Bryce Young struggle, not all his fault, but let's face it, it's making things worse when you've got the number one overall pick, a guy you traded up for, not playing very good football. The team is playing terrible football. You just lose to a backup quarterback and get shut out. The team's been a joke. I mean, there's no way around it, but it always starts at the top. It starts with David Tepper, and here you are. You don't like some fan in the stands and the way he's making fun of your team, so you throw a drink on him. Completely and utterly ridiculous behavior from an owner. And quite frankly, I'm a little bit ashamed of the NFL for coming down so light on him with the punishment. they decide to only fine David Tepper $300,000, which, look, that sounds like a lot of money to regular people, not to a billionaire, not to a billionaire NFL owner. That's pocket change. $300,000 is such a slap on the wrist, nothing. And I just think it's ridiculous that they didn't come down harder on him for this, because this behavior cannot be tolerated. It's completely a black eye for the league. It's completely inappropriate. And I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if this fan files some kind of lawsuit. And I wouldn't blame him, because there's no place for this at all. And if you remember back a while back, Alex, there was a fan who threw a drink on a player. I can't remember the exact incident, but there was a player or a fan that did this, and he got banned from the NFL for life. But yet you have an owner throwing a drink on a fan and you give him a slap on the wrist. I just, it's a bad look for the NFL all the way around. Capital WTF for me. Alex, let's wrap up NFL Week 17 with the game ball. Alex, who's going to get your game ball for Week 17?
Oh, without a doubt, it's Brad Allen, the referee in the Cowboys in the Cowboys Lions game. He deserves the game ball. One that won the game. I think you would give a person in the last moments of a game to make a game changing play. He made a game changing play, actually a division game changing play that could really turn the Cowboys season from going on the road to being at home. So, Brad Allen, you get my game ball of the week.
That is absolutely hilarious. But I'll tell you what, if Mike McCarthy was here giving out the game ball, it would make absolute sense, because that he turned an L into a W for sure, Alex. Alex, my game ball is going to go on a more serious note here to Lamar Jackson. I've been talking about this guy a lot, and you guys know I've been pumping him up. But look, he was lights out, man. There's no doubt about it. Just give him the MVP right now. He locked it up after this game. I don't think there is any doubt that he just won his second MVP award. He led the Ravens to the AFC's top seed with a performance that was totally elite. 18 of 21, 321 yards, 5 touchdowns against the Miami Dolphins, no picks, pulled off huge throws, key throws, multiple times in this game, on third down, big situations. He has taken his game to another level. I've talked about it a bunch, but I am just continue to be impressed week in and week out with the progress he has made in this offense, how comfortable he looks in this offense, the skill set that he has shown. He is the ultimate dual threat quarterback. Quite frankly, Alex, he's probably the best dual threat quarterback in NFL history. I don't think we've ever seen a guy that is this elite of an athlete, a guy who can run and create with his legs at the level he can and can still dice you up with his arm. I can't stop saying enough just how impressed I've been with him. The Ravens are Super Bowl favorites, and they should be.
You're absolutely right. Lamar Jackson has been playing out of his mind this season. Now, here's the thing about it, and what everybody will say that doesn't watch the game. Well, he doesn't have the numbers. He doesn't have the touchdowns. Well, yeah, this is why you have to watch the game and what he's been doing. He absolutely deserves MVP votes. He absolutely deserves to be the MVP. And I think going into this last week, he can just solidify that. Or even if he's playing, because I think there may be one or two players that may perhaps have something to say, but we'll see. But I think Lamar has locked it up.
Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. I personally love the Pick'em game. Just pick between 2 and 5 players to build a Pick'em entry. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. You can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Download the Underdog Fantasy app and sign up today with promo code PGF. That's promo code PGF to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. The official ticketing app of Pintglass Football is now SeatGeek. I can't recommend them enough, guys. I've been using SeatGeek for years. You want to go to a game this season? SeatGeek is here to take the confusion out of buying tickets, making sure you get the best seats at the best prices. With SeatGeek, you'll never have to worry about overpaying for tickets again. How? They put a 0 to 10 score on each ticket, so you know you're getting a good deal. But here's the real game changer. You can get $20 off your first ticket purchase with the code PGFPOD. That's right, $20 off with code PGFPOD. This season, make every game day epic with SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app and remember to enter the code PGFPOD to grab your $20 discount. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Alex, college football playoff. I mentioned it in the intro. Man, I think this was the best college football playoff semifinals we have ever seen. 2 incredible games. One that didn't look like it was going to be a great game turned out to be a great game. Washington hangs on to beat Texas. At one point in time, Alex, they were a muffed punt away from this game being about, 17, 20-point game in the second half. It felt like Washington was going to pull away in this game. They really outplayed Texas for the majority of this game. They were up 13 points, and they got a little bit pass-happy. They did a couple double passes. They went 3 and out in like a minute, and I felt like at that moment, that's when the game flipped. They came out, this offense, they came out at halftime, up-tempo, aggressive. They smelt blood in the water, and they were looking for the knockout punch, but then it kind of all just unraveled. And when that injury happened and the clock didn't run because of the rule, the injured player, the clock is going to stop, obviously, and then it's going to start at the beginning of the snap. That opened the door for Texas here, and I thought Texas was going to win this game. When they marched down late there, they really almost pulled it off, which is nuts, because after felt like this game was over long before that moment, they had a 41-yard catch on 3rd and 10 that moved the ball to the Washington 28-yard line. Was a great throw and catch by Texas. But after that play, in that last about 30 seconds or so, trying to score to win the game, I thought the play calling was terrible by Sark. That fake pitch to the running back and then throws it to him on a swing pass, lost a yard, gets out of bounds, but they were really lucky that he didn't get tackled in bounds and the clock just runs out right there. I did not understand that play. I thought it was one of the dumbest calls I've ever seen in that situation. The final pass where Ewers throws a fade to the sideline I mean, he almost completed it, but if he throws a back shoulder towards the pylon in that situation, it's almost guaranteed to be a touchdown versus that coverage from Washington. I thought the play call on the final play was probably a good call, but just poorly executed as far as the pass goes. What were some of your big takeaways watching this game and the crazy finish that we saw?
Well, Brad, I could tell you right now, my first takeaway is that you lied because you just said this is the worst play call that you ever seen, and we have not even gotten to that Michigan-Alabama game yet. So that's the first thing I got. Because boy, wait till we get to that game. But you're absolutely right. We were texting back and forth because I thought this game was done. It was over. However, they were able to pull it out, and I thought we were about to get an exciting finish. I was texting Brad. I said, I just want to see. I love chaos. For everybody that doesn't know me, I love chaos. When my team is not involved in the college football, I was rooting for it. I wanted to see chaos. I love exciting finishes, but this ended up being a great game. But I think we can sum this down outside of play calling, which we can use in both games. This game, I think we can sum up in one word, accuracy. Because one QB had it consistently and one QB didn't. Quinn Ewers threw a lot of bad passes that were behind players. Michael Penix was pinpoint accurate. I mean, some of the throws that he was making, standing in that pocket with confidence and letting it rip. I mean, I don't know how many times I probably, if I could hashtag accuracy between our conversations, Brad, it probably came up 10 million times. But it's an incredible display of what we saw from Michael Penix and the accuracy. 29 of 38, 430 yards and two TDs. I heard people talking about the safety for Texas that was missing. I don't think it mattered. Michael Penix was just in the zone. You know, the little X that comes up on the Madden players when they get the X factor? He had the X factor. Did not matter who was out there. He was making that throw, and it was pinpoint accurate. A lot of kudos. I've been very critical of Michael Penix Jr., but in this game, I mean, he showed me that he is without a doubt a true first-round talent quarterback in this game.
Yeah, 100%. I think Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu could have been playing safety back there and it wouldn't have mattered. This guy was in the zone, man. There is no doubt. He came to play. And look, Penix is an elite college football quarterback. He made so many big-time throws. You're right. Accurate. So accurate, especially with the deep ball. I mean, he might be the best deep ball passer coming out of college football since Russell Wilson at Wisconsin. I really started thinking about this, Alex. I don't remember the last time I saw a quarterback come out that throws a prettier deep ball. And you talked about the draft. I think his draft stock took a big jump in this game. Now, I know a lot of people thought he'd probably be a first-round pick, but a lot of people were thinking before this game, like maybe late first. I think that's got to change. Similar to C.J. Stroud in the college football playoff, Stroud is a pocket guy. And we didn't see him use his legs that much until that Georgia game in the college football playoff, and it was eye-opening. All of a sudden, we realized, wait a second, he can move better than we thought. Now, Stroud is still a better runner than Penix. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think he's a slightly better athlete than Penix is, but Penix showed me, Alex, that he can move a lot more than I've seen from him this year. Texas got him off of his spot several different times in this game, forced him out of the pocket, and he consistently was able to get away, avoid the pass rush, buy time with his legs. He also rushed for 31 yards, picked up some key first downs on the ground. Look, the injury history, I think it's a concern, but I started thinking about this too, Alex. Tua went fifth overall to the Miami Dolphins a few years ago, and he had a big-time injury history as well, and he got drafted at five. And this is a guy who was healing at the time when he got drafted. He was healing from a bad hip injury, if you remember, at Alabama. Penix is 6'3". Tua is 6 feet tall. Now, when you look at just the size, the stature, I think Penix is a more ideal NFL size with his height, and I think Penix, quite frankly, is a better prospect than Tua was coming out of Alabama. Bigger frame, bigger arm. Both guys are pocket guys, left-handed guys who are accurate. Look, we're going to have plenty of time to, you know, really break down the tape and look at these guys in the offseason. But at this point, I don't know how he doesn't go top 10. And Alex, Kalen DeBoer, this guy is an elite coach. And I think if Harbaugh ends up leaving for the NFL, which I know you've been way ahead of the curve and you've been predicting that for a while now, I think DeBoer is going to be the first guy that Michigan calls without a doubt. This was a mismatch in this game at the two most important spots, head coach and quarterback. And this was an outlier season for Sark. Look, if you look at Sark's resume, you guys know who've been listening to the show. I've been doubting this guy. I was actually a little shocked that they even made it this far. He's about a 7 or 8 win coach. That's what he does consistently. This was his first 10-plus win season ever. Look, he had a great season. I don't want to take anything away from him in that regard. Their team was really good. They have a lot of talent. But he had the biggest payroll in all of college football. The NIL money that Texas spent on that team this season, quite frankly, dwarfs 99% of teams in college football. Their backup quarterback makes $5 million. They are paying so much money for that team. Quite frankly, anything less than a college football playoff was a failure. And let's face it, the Big 12 sucks. That conference is not any good. There's not a chance they get to this spot without going through that conference. And I hate to tell you, Longhorns fans, they're in for a real harsh reality next year in the SEC because there's no Baylor, there's no Texas Tech, there's no Kansas or BYU on the schedule next year. Alex, Michigan comes back to beat Alabama in overtime, an instant classic. Your thoughts on the game, what you saw, just your takeaways in general. I mean, this was an all-timer.
What I will say is, and I was texting Brad, we always text during games, and I was telling him, Saban went back old school and said, I'm just going to play smash mouth football because they just decided they were not going to throw anymore because that first half, Michigan was starting to tee off on Jalen Monroe and Nick Saban, which is what I thought Nick Saban was going to win this game was when he went to the locker room and made halftime adjustments. I knew he was going to do something that was going to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And I thought he had turned it around coming out into the second half when they scored those 10 points. However, they could not do anything else when they just basically they basically grounded themselves and said, we're just going to run the rest of the way. And I think with the Wolverines defense, the way that they're set up, I think it kind of played into their hands, but I thought they were going to run pound, pound, pound until they had an opportunity to maybe bust one over the top, but they never did. And they never could get back into the game until the final minute or so. And then we got what I thought was the dumbest play in college football this year. I mean, if we want to talk about everybody thinking that Marshawn Lynch was going to get the ball at the goal line, I mean, everybody in the world knew that that was going to be with the exact play that it was at the end of the game. And I thought that was a disservice to that team and with everything that they did to get where they are, to call that play at that critical point in time.
Somewhere right now, the Big Ten commissioner is smiling ear to ear. Michigan beats Alabama. The new Big Ten member next season, Washington, beats new SEC member next season, Texas. Big picture here, massive, massive wins for this conference. They're trying to close the gap with them in the SEC, and they've been trying to close that gap. And adding Washington, Oregon, USC and UCLA will definitely help, but beating them in major college football playoff games helps even more. I mean, this was huge. Like I said, this is a more big picture here, but absolutely a huge win and a huge week for the Big Ten. But Alex, this game lived up to the hype. Really impressive. Just a gritty win for Michigan. On the brink at one point for Michigan, they were down 20-13. Nothing was going their way. It just felt like Alabama was going to slowly kind of take control of the game late in the game, like Alabama has done so many times in the past with Saban in big games. And then they rally and they put together that touchdown drive. They get it into overtime. And then obviously Blake Corum wins it in overtime. But just very, very impressed with what I saw from Michigan, this coaching staff. And Michigan, they had to be sick at halftime because they were only up 3 at half. And at the time, they really dominated that first half. They were getting after Milroe, 5 sacks in the first half. I mean, they should have been winning that game by 10 or 14, maybe more. I mean, they outplayed Alabama for pretty much the entire first half. It was impressive the way that Michigan was just the bigger, tougher team in the trenches this entire game. But special teams, I mean, special teams really became a big story in this game, almost cost them this game, and they let Alabama hang around. And when you do that, you let Saban hang around, you're going to be in trouble. But what a game for the college football playoff. This has been the best year for college football ever. I really believe that, Alex. I really hope the national championship game, which we'll dive into in a second, I hope it lives up to the playoff in the season we saw in college football. The ratings were up even bigger than last year, and the committee got it right. And that's the other thing with this. The 4 teams in this playoff belonged in this playoff. I know we had a ton of controversy going into the selection process. This was 2 great games, 4 great teams. It set up what I think should be a great national championship. The college football playoff helmet sticker this week. Look, it's a no-brainer. It's the guy we've been talking about here. It's the guy Alex just finished talking about, Michael Penix Jr. Absolutely lights out. Big time performance. One of the best quarterback performances we've ever seen in the college football playoff. 430 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks, made so many just beautiful throws versus Texas. But I'm also going to give out a second helmet sticker here, Alex, to the other winning quarterback, JJ McCarthy from Michigan. Look, the numbers aren't going to wow you, but he was under a lot of pressure in this game, had to move around, buy time, and make plays. He had wide receivers drop key passes in this game. They got behind, and he led them on that huge game-tying drive to force overtime. That drive was big time. That was big time quarterback play by him, making key plays when it really matters the most in a pressure situation. These two teams were really even, and I think he was the difference for that Michigan offense, especially late in the game. So going to give him a helmet sticker as well, Alex. Let's break it down. Michigan is a 4.5-point favorite as we record this over Washington. We've got 2 different style teams. Styles make fights. So, Alex, what key matchups are you going to be looking for in this game?
Well, I'm going to be looking at those in the trenches. I think this is a game that's going to be won in the trenches. I think Michael Penix is not a mobile quarterback. So that Michigan defense is going to be able to pin their ears back and know where Michael Penix is. And if they can get past that Washington offensive line, I think it's going to be a long night for Washington. However, if the Washington OC realizes that and understands that and can get his quarterback, who has been pinpoint accurate basically all season long, getting that ball out of his hands in what 2.2 to 2.5 seconds, I think he'll have a chance to keep Washington in this game and keep it very close. Now, Washington does have a solid defense, and it's not like that Michigan offense is explosive. Another classic game, provided that Washington can keep Michael Penix upright, because again, he is not very mobile, and that Michigan defensive line knows how to get after somebody, especially if they know he's going to be standing right there in that pocket.
Yeah, Alex, I think the trenches are key. I think they're key in any football game, but I think this game, it's really highlighted. I think you're right. When I look at this team, at Washington, that is, 2 teams this year that were absolutely built to beat Washington were Oregon and Texas. And because these are teams that can win on the line of scrimmage, they can run the ball, which is where Washington is vulnerable, both teams went away from the run way too much, and it cost them in those matchups. Sark just kept throwing the ball, even though he has an NFL running back and he has the guys up front that they would have been able to control this game, run the ball, and it just played right into Washington's hands. They continued to throw the ball. Texas, their running backs each got 9 carries. That's it. Both of their running backs averaged over 6 yards per carry. It's just not in Sark's DNA to stick with the run, even though that was clearly where they were having the most success. I think when he watches this tape, he's going to realize just how big of a mistake it was to not stick with the run. But here's the thing. running the ball is absolutely in Jim Harbaugh's DNA, and I expect Michigan to pound the ball over and over again. Harbaugh isn't afraid to run the ball 20, 25 times in a row. I mean, we've seen it from this team. They have the offensive line and the running back to do it. And if they can keep that Washington offense on the sideline, which I think is going to be the goal here, when I look at Michigan, Michigan used to have an Ohio State problem, right? 3 years ago, people were talking about maybe they should move off of Harbaugh. He couldn't get over the hump with Ohio State, and they had to renegotiate his contract. He actually took less money to stay with Michigan. 3 years ago, they changed their defense, and they built a team specifically to beat Ohio State with guys like C.J. Stroud and Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Marvin Harrison and Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, this pass-happy attack that has elite quarterback play and wide receivers that love to throw the ball around and make big explosive plays. Well, Washington is built and plays just like Ohio State, and Michigan has beat their ass 3 years in a row. Michigan knows that they can't beat a team like Washington or Ohio State in a shootout. They're built to beat them up. And so I expect them to lean on this team, control the game in the trenches. I think Michigan has the guys to slow down Washington. I think that Michigan defense is every bit as good as advertised, and I think Washington could really struggle to stop the ground game from Michigan. I think Washington is going to need to get ahead early in this game. I think it's going to be really important for them if they're going to have a chance to win this. If they can get up early somehow, get some quick scores, get a couple score lead on Michigan, and really force them out of their comfort zone and force them to play in more of a shootout. I think McCarthy is a really solid quarterback, but I don't think he's going to be able to keep up against Penix, you know, in a shootout situation. I think this is a game where McCarthy just needs to manage the game, move the sticks, lean on the run, take care of the ball. I like Michigan in this game. I think it should be a good one, Alex. I expect it to be a close game. I think there's some betting value with Washington plus 4.5 because I think this could be a field goal type of game. It sounds like you like Michigan. What about the point spread? Where are you at there?
Oh, no, I definitely don't like Michigan. I want them to suffer because I want the person that loves Michigan to suffer too. But I am. Yeah, it's personal. But no. I'm hoping for a big game. But no, I think Washington's going to pull this out. I think Michael Penix Jr. is about to make a statement, and that make a statement for him to be put up there next to Drake May, because for this entire time, and I'm looking at it from a draft perspective on purpose, and I think he realized that he's pushed himself up that board. I think he can really push himself up into that top three, top two pick territory. Well, excuse me, two or three. We know we'll just give Caleb where he is, but I think he can push himself over Michael Penix with a great performance in this game against a big time team and show besides the injuries, because I know that's the knock, that he is ready to be a star quarterback on the next level. And I think this is this first step in doing so. He's out there to prove something, and I think he's going to prove it against Michigan.
Last week, Alex, you took the Patriots plus 12 versus the Buffalo Bills. I took the New York Giants plus 6 versus the LA Rams. Alex, we're having a nice second half of the year here. I don't want to jinx it. Let's keep it going this week. Alex, who's your lock of the week for this week?
Hey, Brad, you know what? I'm going to go, and I wanted to make this one juicy on purpose, because I said there were going to be one of these games that this team was going to lose, and I said it was going to be one of these games that the Eagles were going to lose to the Giants. They had a home and home with the Giants with Arizona sandwich in between. They almost won the first time. This time, Giants at home, Eagles giving up 5. I think the Giants are going to get them, and they're not only going to win with the 5. They're going to beat them, and you can lay the 5. They're going to beat them.
Man, I like it. Giants money line. There's some good value there, I'm sure. And look, we talked about the Eagles, the way this team's been playing. The Giants, like you mentioned, played them really tight just a couple weeks ago. I like it. I mean, there's no reason to have a ton of faith in this Eagles team right now. And the Giants, even though they're not playing for a playoff spot, this is a team that's still playing really hard. Outside of a Tyrod Taylor complete meltdown throw on a wide open 2-point conversion against the Rams, they would have won last week. I mean, that game was theirs. And so this is a team that's still playing pretty well, considering the record, considering, you know, having a backup quarterback. This is a team that's playing hard, playing some pretty good football down the stretch. And I wouldn't be the least bit surprised, Alex, if they pull that game out, especially with what we've seen from the Eagles. Alex, I'm taking the Indianapolis Colts +1.5 at home versus the Texans. Look, I love this Texans team. They've been one of the great stories this year that nobody saw coming. Well, except me, who did pick them to finish second in the AFC South, and I predicted 8 or 9 wins. But anyway, the future is bright for this Texans team. I think they're heading in the right direction. I think we can all see that. But this is a tough spot because they're playing against a very overlooked Colts team. I think they're well coached. This is a divisional home dog. I love this spot for the Colts. Getting, I know it's only 1.5, but getting any points at all, I think, is big time value here. So give me the Colts versus the Texans. If you enjoy the podcast, guys, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We really appreciate it. Once again, I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter @PGF Podcast.